Okay, folks, we'll get started. We've been reminding folks that this is a new track this year. This is the end user track. Many of you will look around to your neighbor and notice that most of you are not end users. So we encourage you, particularly for next May, 18th through 20th in Ottawa, to encourage more real-world end users to attend. So as part of our variety show here, our next comedy routine is brought to you by Terry Diaz and Ed Morris. Terry leads out technical lead at Cisco for certifications, and of course Ed is lab director over at Gossamer. I think many of you know. So I'll turn things over to them again. I think this is critical, particularly for ultimate end users, is truly learning from each other as we go through this process. So please join me in welcoming both Terry and Ed.
Hi, thanks. So I just want to say welcome to our talk, and I'm not sure if all of you are aware, but this talk was actually presented by Alicia and Ed at ICCC just this past September. But when they got the idea, it was actually for this conference here. So you can imagine they've had a lot of time to prepare and how to present and everything. Unlike me, I've just had a couple of weeks, and that was when Alicia said, oh, by the way, you're going to be my stand-in, and then there was something about I'll send you well wishes from Cancun while I'm on the beach, you know. So I do have notes, and so I'm not as well prepared, nor will it be as probably entertaining as it was in Windsor, but we'll try to get through it. So as you can see, we're here to talk about, you know, the things that are going well with NIAP and NIST, and the things where there could be some improvement, because as with success, you know, we all want to be successful, and we're hoping that we can extrapolate some of this information and pass it along to, you know, like other certification bodies and schemes and that sort of thing, so that they can also help, you know, improve their process as well. So now, Ed.
Okay. Thanks, Terry. Exactly as Terry says, Alicia and I had presented this at ICCC, and when Alicia had first kind of presented this idea to me and suggested that we do sort of a NIAP and NIST, or a NIAP and CMVP, learning from each other, I was immediately struck, because for those of you who know me, I got my start in 140-2 some time ago, and about 5 years ago I started doing common criteria validations, and so my experience with common criteria was based from a FIPS point of view. Okay, oh, that's how it's done in common criteria. Well, here's how it's done in FIPS. And all of those differences sort of came flooding back to me as Alicia suggested this idea. And I said, that's great. You know, all those things I thought about, and actually the pros and cons of each, that'd be a great presentation. You know, we can kind of learn and make suggestions. I don't think there's anyone here from CMVP, which is kind of a shame. I was hoping to get a couple people to sort of bounce ideas off of. But those good and bad things, I think, are going to be great. And even better was that we had two different perspectives. Alicia and Terry, of course. Well, Terry has multiple perspectives as a spiritual guru and life coach, conflict resolution life coach. But from a customer, a vendor point of view, and also from a laboratory point of view. So those two points of view sort of offer some point, counterpoint. And in fact, in some of the topics we talk about, we actually may have different perspectives on what's good and what's bad. But we tried to take all these ideas that we had, that we kind of collaborated and came up with, about the two different programs, put them together, and then kind of gave them a rough categorization. So we came up with five categories, and then we'll talk through those different points, kind of discussing them a little bit, sometimes throwing some anecdotes in, changing all the names to protect the innocent. And then we'll finish with some further thoughts that I had, and these are some new slides that I added to the deck, so please excuse them if they're a bit crude and if the diagrams don't quite line up. The lab managers meeting on Monday and Tuesday of this week, I had a chance to sort of float some of these ideas, and they seemed to be sticking a little bit with the CMVP, so I took it one step further and kind of came up with a vision of sorts. Okay, so first category that we have, timelines. And for a show of hands for who was present for Josh's presentation just before this? Okay. Sean had said that this is the end users forum. I think it might be the gripes and complaints forum, but hopefully we'll keep this on a positive one. Timelines and timelines for FIPS are often challenging. CC had their own set of challenges, although those have changed over the past 5 years. So we'll start with kind of what's done right and then areas for growth. Usually I like to do what's called a compliment sandwich. I'll start with something kind of complimentary, something nice. I'll transition into something a little bit less nice, but then end with a compliment. Here we'll just do right and then areas for growth, which is, of course, stuff to work on. As you can see from the bullet points, NIAP has time limits. So you start your evaluation and you have a clock that's running. This didn't used to be the case, although there were some rules on it, but now it's a bit firmer. There's a 6-month or 180-day window, and you need to complete your evaluation within that time frame. If not, there's sort of penalties in the sense that you be delisted from the evaluation list, and you also could have to rev to a new set of requirements in order to come back into the process. I think that's good because time matters. You want to encourage folks to move quickly. NIST has liberal or sort of non-existent time periods. That's seen as perhaps a positive. I think that was Alicia's view that that's positive because you're not constrained, right? Development took longer than we expected. Okay, we can accommodate that. I actually have a view that it's perhaps maybe an area for growth or maybe in the middle, because from my point of view, one of the key determinants of a successful certification is the length of time, and they're inversely proportionate. So the shorter your certification, the better off you're going to be. NIAP has, in its evaluation list, it gives you the dates kind of to be expected. I think that's very good for the end users who unfortunately aren't here in the droves that we would like, but they need to be able to look at the evaluation list and the module and process list and make an informed decision. And it's one thing to have the module and process list with all these modules, it's there, yes, but how long has it been there? How quickly is it moving from stage to stage? The NIAP process really gives you that feeling, what's the schedule, what's the expected date? NIST provides a little more granularity in the module and process list so you can at least show, hey, we're in review pending. That's what it was first called. Now I hear a lot of folks refer to it as box two. We finally achieved box two. We've now moved from in-lab testing to pending review. Sort of underscores the unceremonious nature of that transition. So growth. One of the points for growth is that industry runs on timelines, timeframes, milestones. Labs have contracts that may stipulate those milestones. But labs sort of stand in the middle between industry and government. And government really doesn't work on timelines and reviewer schedules and kind of almost a guaranteed response time. And that's something that I think NIST could do a much better job with. Maybe with the contractors they have now, they're able to do that, but that's an area for growth. Obviously, the report queue, I think that's kind of goes without saying. NIST involvement, and really it should be CMVP involvement in the FIPS process, I think occurs too late in the process. As we get to the final slides, I'll show you my thoughts on actually how to kind of correct that and improve that. The implementation guidance, this is one that I think the previous presentation by Josh, it was implicit in what he was talking about, but the IGs, the changes in requirements, new requirements, those often really impact the timeframes and the timelines, and that's, I think, a big area that is probably low-hanging fruit to actually fix. We have kind of takeaways on each of the slides, so the takeaways here is nothing magical. Timelines matter to everybody. So the next area, ever-changing technology.
Okay, so here we were looking at, how things are evolving with the certification process. And so for NIAP, the one thing that they've recently done is that they've implemented the TRTs for seeking feedback while in process or really at any stage within the evaluation to address or resolve any questions or issues that there may be with how a requirement is being met, or maybe with the requirement itself, or perhaps even with some of the testing elements or evidence that's required. And we actually did a little bit of checking on this to see, because they set up timelines. They said if you submit a TRT, then within 48 hours you're going to get a response back for that, because it's actually, what is it,
Technical Rapid Response Team.
Yeah. So the rapid response, right? So they came up with this 48 hours, and we did some checking on it, and they actually respond 80% of the time within that 48 hours. So I think that's a tremendous, you know, done right thing that they've done, that they've held to that. And then also, if there's a new PP that somebody is going up against, they provide extra oversight for that. And that's so that the PP at the end, along with the product, it also gets validated. And so you have to make sure that PP is sound, that the requirements make sense, the testing is really going to ensure that requirement is met. You know, it's good that they've added these, you know, this extra oversight, and so that you can get through it in the amount of time that they've specified, the 6 months, right? And then the last one that NIST, they've agreed to meet and discuss on new technology and how to properly validate that new technology. Some of the areas for growth, along with what Ed was saying with the IGs and everything, is that the RFPs, that's kind of like in the same bucket as TRTs, and it takes too long with new technologies. And so if there was some sort of like timeline that they could do that, you know, within, so that, you know, it's not delayed and that those new technologies can, you know, be considered more quickly and implemented. And then we have NIAP, an area for growth with them, is that for their extended packages, sometimes they want to get them out quick because it's focusing on one particular function or feature of a product, and so they want to be able to get it out quickly. And so they're creating these EPs in a vacuum, and sometimes, depending on that technology, they may not really understand what it is or truly how it's implemented or how it should be tested. And so if they reach out to the vendor community, I think that they would be able to do that a lot better, because then they would be able to get feedback really on that functionality and how it's implemented and how it can be tested and actually used. And then, okay, so the big one that we're faced here with is takeaway, and it says virtualization, and that's like a hot topic right now, and I'm actually leading a subgroup for the Network Device Collaborative Protection Profile to try to incorporate virtualization into that PP. We believe, the small team, we believe that we've come up with a way that we can easily do that, because we need to evaluate those products. And so working with the community and the vendors that have those type of products in the labs to get their input on how to test it and to make sure what we want to actually bring into the PP is going to be right and sound with that. And for cloud computing, it's the same sort of way, because we have to get these products certified. We can't just have products out there that don't have any certification against them. And so that's one way to take, you know, sorry.
Yep. No, that's one way to kind of approach it. Mm-hmm. And just to kind of add on to what Terry said, actually a quick show of hands, I can spot the lab's vendors. I know most of you, but if you're a vendor, can you put it? Okay. How many vendors have had a lab or perhaps negotiated with the CMBP on an RFG? Have any of you had direct experience with? Okay. A couple of folks. So the RFGs are requests for guidance, and they're basically when we encounter a new technology, kind of how to approach that. And I have one anecdotal story of an RFG that actually took 18 months to close from sort of first inception, the problem that was, you know, laid out and how to actually go about doing this. It actually took about 18 months. So there were a couple meetings I had with Randy and Jean back then at the RSA conference, maybe 2 years, and sort of negotiations and opportunities to kind of represent a couple of slide decks explaining, you know, things like hash catalogs and how that signing process worked. So that was sort of, in my mind, one that we took, and it took far too long. To be fair, NIAS protection profiles are technology specific. And so the experts that they have behind the tap, the TRRTs can often deliberate and give an answer. FIPS often takes a little bit more time to ruminate on, because it's going to be a one-size-fits-all standard and it has to apply to everything. So that makes it a little bit more challenging. But I think that's an area for growth. Okay, handling challenges during an evaluation or during a validation, as the case may be.
Okay, so one of the things that on the done right is, again, NIAP implementing the TRTs, you know, for feedback while during the evaluation process. And then another thing that they do is right from the very beginning, they normally have a kickoff meeting when a new product is going in for evaluation. And so then that way you have NIAP, you have the validators, you have the lab, and you have the vendor. You have a meeting, it's a kickoff meeting. And so then that way everybody, you know, has a complete understanding of the process, how the evaluation is going to go, the timeline. There's a sense that the product already meets all of the requirements, that everybody understands the process, and that the evaluation is going to be successful, and that it's going to be able to complete on time. And then to be able to, and then NIAP's recent policy of the reuse of entropy evaluations, I think that that's a really good thing that they've done, because if you have similar products that are using that same chip, they use that chip in the same way, why should I have to go through that whole evaluation process again when it's essentially the same evidence? But they did put some caveats on that. It does, you know, you still have to provide all of the evidence and everything, but you can have the disclaimer that, you know, okay, this is the same chip, it's used in the same way, and this similar product that we just evaluated. And that product, it has to be, the evaluation can't be older than 18 months, so it has to be a recent evaluation for that reuse. An area for growth, and I think that this is, you know, it's for an industry that's always evolving. I think you're always going to have, you know, an issue with growing pains here, and that's because now we're doing evaluations much quicker, so you're going to have more evaluations that are going to come in. There's more, and within a lab, you're going to have to be able to scale to that, and, you know, and validators are going to have to, you know, be assigned to the various projects as well. So, you know, there's a lot of resource constraints that need to be taken into consideration, because the evolution, I think, for products is going much quicker now. For NIST, for the allowance of vendors acting in good faith, I'm going to let Ed speak to that because he knows a little bit more about that than I do.
Right. So, I mean, the area there for growth is just that a lot of times I feel that the CMBP can be categorical in their interpretation of the requirements. And these interpretations can differ over time. I've seen them over the course of 5 years do a complete 180 and then turn around once again, sort of a 360. And in many cases, with vendors that we've been working with and advising accordingly, this is sort of, you know, we spin them through this, we had them there, and then we go back, and the CMBP is drawing issue during the review phase. We're able to actually kind of push back on them because we have this history and demonstrate, well, look, you know, here's what you said at this lab manager's meeting, here's a case precedent on a previous validation, and we can usually sort of get the vendor out of trouble or out of an unfair situation. But I think in general, the CMBP needs to be a little bit more understanding. There's a CMVP motto, which was mentioned at the lab manager's meeting, and my ears perked up, and it was the mission statement. And I wish I meant to put it in the slides, I apologize, but the mission statement was along the lines of improving cryptography in, you know, commercial systems used by the federal government. And the key word was improving. It wasn't making it perfect. It wasn't beyond reproach. It wasn't meeting, you know, the letter of the law without fail. It was improving. And so I always think that, much like, you know, there's kind of a tax concept, when you, if you make an error and it's in good faith and you're not trying to defraud the U.S. government of their taxes, they'll usually not assess penalties or fines and take you to criminal court. Of course, if you're trying to embezzle, that's a different story. So that's an area for growth. I think it's kind of a perception issue, and it's a treatment issue as well.
Yeah. And so, and as we mentioned here, one of the takeaways is that, you know, during any evaluation, there's always going to be issues that arise. There's going to have to be some sort of discussion, and, you know, maybe a product has to be updated, or maybe the requirement has to be changed, or whatever. But I think with some of the things that we see that it's being done right, like TRTs and, you know, and NIAP's involvement from the beginning, I think that that's helping to make sure that, you know, we can still get products evaluated within its lifetime, within its life cycle.
Okay, so community outreach and participation.
Sorry.
So NIAP does a good job of working with industry. NIST circulates draft IGs. I'm not sure if that's to scare you or to get impact or get feedback, rather. Maybe it serves both purposes. The new SB-800-131A Rev 1 promises to preclude TLS, Ike, and SSH come 2018. That's something you should provide feedback to, I recommend. But it's good to get those draft IGs out there. NIST works on the ISO crypto standards. I think that's good for ISO and for sort of international recognition. And CC, of course, is a mutual recognition, although the CCRA is a bit, I won't touch any more on that. Areas for growth. So the bullet points really kind of poor, but my basic thought was for the transition from 80-bit crypto to 112-bit crypto, okay, we need stronger keys because computers are getting faster. That was fairly straightforward. Well, what does that mean, okay? So 857 was one special pub that covered that, but NIST released a new one, which was 800-131, and that went into a great deal of detail, kind of separating out different algorithms because how are those handled? And that was nice at a nitty-gritty level. But for a vendor who has a product, I think 800-131 is perhaps an alternative to a sleeping remedy, right? You're going to read that and kind of fall asleep, or it's going to make you more confused. And I think what would really benefit the vendor is a document like that or a companion one that actually then takes forth the fact that SHA-1 is allowed in some cases but not another and apply that to the industry protocols that are most commonly out there. I did a couple of presentations at the past few ICMCs to try and elucidate or expound upon that and drill down into those to see which protocols are going to be impacted and how they're going to be impacted. Ultimately, for a vendor, I think it's much more meaningful to have a list of cipher suites for TLS that go bye-bye, right? That I can understand. I can also understand the low-level crypto stuff, but for an average vendor, it's less useful. So trust in governments, industry participation. Yeah, the trust in governments is sort of a international. I think that got a laugh or a chuckle from the ICCC.
Yeah. So I'd like to just take a minute and expand on presenting the requirements in industry terms. So sometimes I get carried away when I talk with some people that I work with in different technology areas, and there's this one colleague of mine in particular, and when I start speaking to her about common criteria or whatever, she's just like, stop, I don't understand a single word you're saying. Please speak in general terms in English to me. You know, because in all of us in this room, we understand CC. We understand FIPS. Perhaps some of us, you know, way too much, we understand it. But that's not true for everybody that we're going to work with or, you know, interact with. And so now with the PPs that NIAP is doing, they have what they call an ESR, and it's an Essential Security Requirements document. And the base of that document, it's like maybe 2 pages, and it actually outlines in English, normal speaking language, what they're trying to do, what is the threat that they're trying to mitigate, what's the functionality that's going to mitigate that, what are the objectives that need to be met, and that sort of thing. So sometimes I think, NIAP is trying to do that in a way, but I think, we could do a much better job at doing that.
So tomorrow's challenges, the future, what does it hold? It's going to be a weekend, which will be nice. NIAP and NIST working together. There was a presentation about that. I think it's great that that's ongoing. I think they can only improve things, obviously, as the two programs have drawn closer now that we're in the U.S. were strictly PP evaluations and exact conformance. NIAP and IID kind of reusing and simplifying the CSFC program, piggybacking off of the common criteria, and even the DOD STIG process for some new technologies, sort of consolidate, make it simpler, combine if you can. Everyone sort of benefits. It becomes an easier process. You get reuse. Areas for growth. This first bullet's kind of an ugly. This is mine. It's also ugly. That didn't come out quite right. That it's worded poorly, I'll put it that way. But this requirement is meant to basically say that there's no review of the FIPS requirements. Does it make sense to still have the continuous random number generator test? Let's get rid of it. Now, arguably, 140-3 hasn't emerged, so that's part of the reason that there's been a lack of pruning. But I would submit that things like physical security and some of the other antiquated requirements really don't add value. And a critical review of those to say what really adds value and what's diminishing returns would benefit the program greatly. I think in some sense NIAP did that for CC over the course of 5 years in a very tumultuous fashion, but the end product I think is actually a better value. Advanced planning for the crypto requirements. This one, I think it's just the more advanced planning you can do, the better off everyone is, because it takes a long time to really move and get the legacy systems on. So advanced planning and working ahead.
And I think another thing that looking forward that's happening is that in the collaborative protection profiles, that they're actually starting to reference ISO standards, you know, for some of the crypto and for some of the other areas where standards, you know, you have to implement something according to some standard. And I think that helps, because then it's not one nation's specific standard that gets referenced, especially since, you know, we're in an evolving business where we live and work in a global environment. You know, our products are being used worldwide. You know, and so we have to make sure that those requirements are going to be applicable to where those products are going to be sold and used.
Okay. So here's the mic in case you want to say anything. Okay, so here's where we get to the, I'll call it my vision, although maybe it's a fantasy. And again, these, forgive the slides because they're a little bit rough, because they, I was copying and pasting from some Gossamer stuff into this template. This slide here has a lot of boxes and a lot of writing. It's meant to just show you what a FIPS validation looks like. In a better formatted version, this is what we often show customers to give you a feel for how the process goes. So you can ignore most of the detail, but the important points are that the validation testing and the module and process list starts right in the middle there. And you can see that the vendor and Gossamer have been doing work prior to that point. And then we complete our report and we submit to the government. And sort of once we submit at the review pending, then we wait for CMVP to review it. After we get back comments, then we do the review. So that's just a brief overview of the FIPS process. You've probably seen something similar. But this really isn't drawn to scale, I would submit. And so this is probably, you know, a little bit more representative of the time frames involved. And you can sort of see the simplified version there. Again, the colors are the same, but really we've got this gap in the middle where we're waiting for review. And that time varies, you know, maybe 2, maybe 3 months. It kind of depends on the CMVP. At its peak, I had one report at I was still at a previous lab that was no less than 9 months from submission to first response. Well, that's kind of a killer right there. And then you can see the iterative fashion of the coordination. Sort of you get back the responses, we try and jump on those, turn them around as quickly as possible, make some updates, but then maybe there's a waiting period for the reviewer to get to it, and then we get back some additional comments. If there were any CMVP reviewers in the audience, I would probably say that maybe this is an exaggeration or slightly unfair, and you know, I guess I could say, oh, I was just joking about this slide. Here's probably what it really looks like. Magnifying the green, but thankfully there's no one from the CMVP in the audience. So for vendors, and I know every lab kind of counts it, for the vendors, who's had an IG come up during their validation that's affected and actually required a redesign or a code change? Okay, so I see a couple of hands. So the implementation guidances is one of the things we talked about. And the problem that we have is that the work, vendor's work, starts even before this slide, right? If you've got hardware, you may have 12 to 18 month lead times. You're working on a new ASIC. Or 24 months. Thank you. Could be even longer, I suppose. So you do have, you have those lead times. And what may happen is even before we're really into the meat of the project, boom, you get hit with an IG. Well, okay, that's not too bad because it's actually before that initial block there is kind of an initial meeting to assess the product. But then as you're going through the validation, depending upon how long you're allowing for that process, pow, get hit with another new IG. Now, I've always recommended that the IGs, and I constantly would chant, you know, what's, there should be a default transition period, 6 months, you know, you need to provide some timing. So maybe that IG affects us, maybe it doesn't. Sometimes there's the retroactive IGs, although, you know, no, we don't do that, or we don't make new requirements as well. So, okay, so now we get one right before submission. Okay. Well, hopefully, again, no code changes. You might have to do a little bit of a tap dance. You might have to update your documentation. You gotta have to think on your feet. It's a little bit tricky. Get our report in, now we're waiting at the government. Well, during that time, which could be 9 months, but hopefully it's only three, pow, another IG comes at you. Well, really it shouldn't affect you, but yet there are some IGs that are retroactive because you labs are idiots and you should have always known this was the case, and this IG just clarifies what we've been saying all along. Thankfully, no one from the CMEP is here. So you kind of get the picture. During review, what can actually happen is that those IGs now are top of mind for the reviewers. And fairly or unfairly, they're going to review the report with those IGs in mind, and they're going to find fault. Well, how could you be so dumb? Obviously, you need to meet the AES GCM requirements. It's IG A5. Come on. It's been published since, well, you know, we might have started 2 years ago, or we may have submitted 9 months ago. So there's a little bit of that fairness to vendors that I think happens. And, you know, in an even worse case scenario, you may get one during kind of the coordination phase. And there during coordination, you may be trying to resolve comments, and is it really fair to have another IG kind of come up? And there goes your certificate, which, of course, is no joke. So I joke a little bit. There's probably more than double on the IGs. But that's how it feels from my point of view, having had IGs pop up at different points. Okay. So let's take a look at the CC timing. Again, don't really worry about all the details. The key important point is the evaluation starts in the middle there, and we see green activity from NIAP. There's sort of a kickoff process, and there's a check-in. So you've got government involvement and government activity. With the CMVP, they're 9 to 12 months out, really, from the initial meeting before you even have contact, unless you're trying to RFG process. With NIAP, you sort of get this vetting of your certification before you start, and I think that's great. Terry mentioned earlier that for a lab doing a protection profile for the first time, you get extra oversight. So if I'm doing a FIPS validation, there's no reason that I couldn't get maybe extra scrutiny from the CMVP before I bring the product in. Is it fully baked? Is it ready to go? You could sort of have that vetting. So that I think would be a big plus. You could get sort of attention. And so the vision that I have is taking this diagram here and extending it. It's fairly straightforward, nothing, there's no rocket science. But I suggested in Monday's lab managers meeting that NIST begin collecting their fees up front. Partially I suggested that because they're trying to talk about how to change the structure of them. And I think if they did that up front, they'd be able to sort of vet the submission ahead of time and better manage the vendor's expectations. Sorry, you're going to have to break your report from one report with 15 different devices into three reports that each have four. Math doesn't quite work out, but you get the point. In addition, by paying your fees up front, I think NIST could also put, a CMVP could put a time bound on it. Once you actually enter into evaluation, you've got 6 months to complete, 9 months, 3 months, pick a number, to actually complete and get us the report. That sort of gives you now a module and process list that really has some teeth. If your product appears on the module and process list, Well, it shouldn't be any more than 6 months or 9 months or 3 months until you actually complete. That might be a bit scary, a bit not really a win for vendors, but I think the quid pro quo should be the following, and this I think is the most important point of this. So if you see folks from the CMBP or the CMUF echo this, that I think that once you've registered, it should be just like in NIAP, you're grandfathered under those requirements at the start. Doesn't matter what IGs come out, even if it's retroactive IGs that don't change the requirements, don't make new ones, but the vendor is held to those requirements and those requirements alone throughout the entire rest of the process. And that quid pro quo, I think, you know, I showed the IGs popping up, I think that would provide a lot more certainty and, you know, allow folks to not try and hit a moving target. And that's what some of the validations feel like if they, you know, experience delays because of development delays or even experience delays for other reasons, holidays and things like that.
Well, we also get surprised by early sunsetting of protection profiles that are then used over other protection profiles that are potentially wildly different, like network device protection profile. Oops, you've got 3 months before the 6 month cutoff.
Yep. Exactly. Right. So, I mean, so that's a common criteria example where it's, you can think of it almost like a set of IGs or a new protection profile that changes the requirements. And NIAP has that so you can be in and you're grandfathered in. Obviously, if you exceed your time frame, then you might have to rev and go against the new PP. But that's the same concept. With FIPS, we really haven't had a new FIPS, so it's not so much the new FIPS. It's all the IGs and the clarifications that creep in. And really, there's a lot of them. And I think proofing against that would be a big win for industry.
I expect we're going to see some more fun with FIPS next. The ISO 19790 and all the fun that's going to be with other nations deciding that they want the ISO editions of all the all the crypto algorithms, and you're doing the U.S. plan. Are there really going to be mapping that's one-to-one?
I've got my own thoughts on the ISO FIPS, but that's a separate presentation. Any other questions? Ian.
For going forward, like as far as I guess room to grow, would you see them ever reusing the entropy analysis done? I think it's kind of inefficient when you have a lot of level one software modules that then have to go and prove that they have enough entropy from DevRandom or Windows or whatever they're operating on. And I feel like that's just done one off, and you probably, I'm sure CMBP sees a hundred different ways that DevRandom is described, and I don't think there's really any value provided by that because as
yeah, so I think entropy reuse would be a big win. It's tricky. The problem with kind of presenting that is you get the counter argument, which is if it's a software module, it may ultimately depend upon the hardware on which it's running. So can you really extend it to another platform? I gave a presentation on entropy yesterday. I think that my the takeaway about 40 bits is enough, which is not what I said, mind you. But my feeling was that at a certain point, actually wringing your hands over entropy, whether you have 256 bits or 500 bits, is a little bit too much. But I'm not quite sure that there's an ability to reuse beyond sort of hardware chip or perhaps a reference platform with a FIPS validated module. So for example, Bcrypt GenRAN or something such as that, if there were a validation to support that and maybe there's a reference platform, you could target that same platform and then you should be able to reuse. I think that would be something that might be palatable to the CMBP.
Same operational environment, because Windows did all these cryptographic and they contributed to cryptographic RAM, so it should be good.
And part of the problem, of course, too, is that 890B still is a draft, right? So it's a little bit of a wishy-washy world we're living in now. Thanks. Other questions? All right. Hopefully you got a little bit out ahead of time, because it's lunch, and you don't want to be last in line for the buffet.